latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There it is, Christmas in Hollis. So great. Rick Hammerly standing by, and Hammer on the road as the holiday season upon us, and not unusual for Rick and Gina to be meandering around. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. We're not on the road just yet. Later in the week.
Okay.
Later in the week.
Oh, Friday. It's Friday when we talk. Yeah. We'll, okay.
Yeah, it's Friday. It's Friday today. Yeah, since today's, you got me all messed up. I knew when that phone rang at 5:30 this morning that it was going to be you, and getting ready for a Tuesday run. You know, my brain doesn't. I think Friday, and it's Tuesday. But anyway, we're up and at 'em after a later night than normal, but for a good reason. Went to go see Ain't Too Proud last night, the story of the Temptations. And I think it's still running out there on Broadway. I'm not sure. No, but another fantastic. Oh, what a great show. So if that comes to a city near you and you like music at all, and it was just fantastic.
Sweet. Nice.
So that was a birthday present. Yeah, I think the birthday present of my daughter that she was going with her dad to go see Ain't Too Proud last night at the Music Center. So different locale. Don't get down there. It's amazing. You know, there's so many venues here in Los Angeles. Growing up as a kid, when you would go through the calendar section to decide what concerts you were going to go to, I mean, there's 20 to 25 different venues throughout the city. And you know, some you went to more than others. And then all of a sudden, like, this was at the Music Center, which is actually more for, you know, symphonies and ballet and opera, things like that. But I was telling Lindsay, I said, I don't think I've been to the Amundsen Theater and for five times my whole life. You know, it's pretty wild just how they spread the talent around the town. But a good night there. And it's like I was telling, it's pretty crisp out here. For here, it's in the 40s, in the low 40s, actually. But nothing like the Midwest is going through and part of the other rest of the country. So I'm not complaining, but it is Christmas time. So it's supposed to be cold, right?
Yeah, not there. I certainly, you know, my morning, particularly Monday last week, a week ago yesterday, my morning at Clocker's Corner was, it was rough. I will say that. And a little better on Tuesday. And then finally Wednesday was very palatable. But yeah, it isn't exactly, it has not been what you look forward to.
Well, you know, people forget. I mean, it's not Florida, and you know, historically, it gets chilly here in January, February. You know, it just doesn't get to the degrees of frost or you know, maybe a frost, but not iced out. It doesn't get really into the 30s that often, but it gets into the 40s. And when that, you know, you get a 10-mile, 15-mile-an-hour wind in the 40s, you know, everybody knows what that does. So, you know, it's nothing close, but it's California cold, so you deal with it, and it's not that bad. So move on, but yeah, put the old rock. I always sacrifice instead of, you know, pure Christmas music. I put the rock and roll Christmas tunes on, you know, in the morning, so we wake up, and it's kind of weird. I was making my smoothie this morning. I hear Bon Scott singing like Jingle Bells or something. It's just kind of wild, but that's a little flair to the old.
Yeah, we love that. We love the we love the Christmas our collection. Well, Rec, we got to dive into this. It's a thorny conversation again every year. The Graded State Committee, you know, drops that lead Christmas present on everybody's doorstep. What? Go ahead. I'll turn it over to you.
Well, now, you know, I'd rather, you know, you kind of throw some stuff at me, and not every year is you know, the same as it is. This year it happened to come up to, you know, dropping a few grade ones, some very historical ones, and basically overall, there were a lot more downgrades than upgrades, which, you know, was coming. It was trending that way, and you know, the committee works slowly. It's not reactionary. You know, really quickly, things work over time, and you know, the full crop has slowly been declining over the last 20 years, and you know, even a little bit over the last 4 or 5 years as well. And you know, when that means there's less horses, obviously there's less good horses, and some of the races have reflected that with smaller fields or fields with less quality over a period of time. And lo and behold, sometimes it's time to vote on some of these races and take some action. you know, whether it be good or, you know, up or down. And, you know, every vote, whether it's from a grade one to a grade two or a grade three to a grade two or any of those, you know, are discussed thoroughly. And usually it's something that's been progressing over the last 2 or 3 years. So, you know, like take the Woodward, for example, obviously, you know, race has been there forever. I've got September 17th, 1994, you know, one of the best days of my life, the Woodward, when Holy Bull won and a bunch of us were there. I got a picture on my mantle here about that, with that day. But, you know, it's tough when a race like that comes up. It's been shuffled around. You know, it's in October now. And, you know, let's face it, those races that used to be, you know, automatic preps for the Breeders' Cup 4 weeks out are kind of losing favor. You know, people like to prep out a little bit further. And, you know, the Woodward just was headed in a certain direction, and, you know, give it another one and give it another one. And, you know, when it's part of a three race scheme there, basically the same categories going long in the dirt, you know, grade one in August, a grade one in September, and a grade one in October, it's tough to keep all of them going. And, you know, some small fields have prevailed there, and, it was just, you know, it was just time for that race to get downgraded at the moment. And, you know, of course, the theory with all these races, when they get downgraded, you know, they're all, we look at every race in a local way, in a regional way, and in a national way, and kind of see what happens. So, you know, theoretically, when a race like that goes away, it'll make races around it stronger. And that's, you know, that's part of the methodology of this, is some kind of pattern where we, you know, we kind of get better as we move along with an optimal goal. And in this case, the optimal goal is obviously, you know, the Breeders' Cup Classic, or, you know, possibly the Breeders' Cup Mile. But these races that did get downgraded and even upgraded, they didn't just happen overnight. It's kind of been a long scheme. And, you know, they're tough. And like I said, they're discussed and they're voted on and sometimes re-voted on. And, you know, this year was a lot of downgrades, and to tell you the truth, got a fair amount of comments on that way. Like, well, it's about time, to kind of, you know, keep up with the full crop. And, so it happens if it happens. You know, another thing I want to make clear is when we go into these sessions, you know, there's no agenda. There's not, okay, well, we need to take five from this category and add two to this category. Nothing. None whatsoever. Nothing's ever talked about, you know, a certain number that has to go up or down. So just kind of roll with it.
Rick, focus for a minute on, because I know, you know, Andy's going to join us next, and I know he's going to certainly talk about it. With the Cigar and the Woodward, explain the, you know, the warning system and how much leeway, you know, given historic proportion of certain races. I mean, the Woodward even more than the Cigar Mile, to my way of thinking. You know, explain how those races like those are dealt with in this particular case. I mean, to what extent you can discuss the ins and outs of it.
Well, there's years ago, and I'm going to say 8 to 10 years ago, we used to send out warning letters to you know, races. Hey, your race is on a watch list. Please do this. During some period of the time when I was in and off, we stopped doing that. I think it just got too, like, out of hand as far as a warning. So, you know, you kind of have your own warning. There's obviously from New York, there's a representative that is from New York. And so, you know, they take that back to the, you know, powers that be and say, hey, you know, they just know that, you know, hey, what do we want to do? And, you know, Like I said, there was the Woodward's one of those races kind of moved around. It was early September, mid September. At one time it was in August 4 years ago, and then it moved to October. So it was it looked like they were trying to find a spot for it. Working around the jockey club, and of course the Whitney in August is just one of the most solid races around. And as we talked about, it's further away from the Breeders' Cup. Those races seem to have been getting better and better, and though sometimes some of the ones closer to the Breeders' Cup just haven't. So anyway, you mentioned the Cigar Mile. There used to be a time when there was plenty of horses to run in the Breeders' Cup, and people would run back, and just not running back. And now, the two grade ones after the Breeders' Cup won't be there. So in fact, that should help the Breeders' Cup. Here's a day that we're trying to show off our best racing, with the culmination of, year long preps and winning your ends and all that stuff. And we have the Breeders' Cup Mile and the Breeders' Cup Classic. And, 3 weeks later was another grade one. It just wasn't working. So we'll just so happened that those two races got eliminated, and Breeders' Cup will be the last long grade one races on the dirt, the Mile and the Classic. So, for grade one material, you'll be running into those races.
Explain one more time, Hammer, to how many years of survey is included in the scoring average.
We're all provided with material that go back includes five runnings of each race. The time it takes to build up to make a move. I mean, like I said, 5 years of races are looked at. And I mean, last thing we're going to do is go, if they have a good running next year, it could come back. It's at the point where it takes a while of steady decline or steady upgrade to kind of get to that spot where you're, at the end of the diving board, so to speak. And, either going to, do the triple Lindy or you're not. And it's a long look that we have on these, and some race could have a couple bad years and then they rebound and then they have another they go up and down. But when, like you said, when a race is kind of for a year or two, it's like, okay, we're gonna keep an eye on this one and see how they respond, and the response is not great, then it takes a second look. So like I said, none of these are dealt with quietly. There's discussion that go on, I'll say one thing with this committee, and I've said it. I've been on a lot of committees. I've been on a few different great estate committees. This group is just a super group to work with. The discussions that are in there. I will say too. We have visitors. That sit in on these meetings,
right?
that Toba, has, and various from various. So some are racing people, some are breeders, some are owners, and they, I think we have five or six each grading session, and it's tough. And people ask, well, I would like to do that, and I go, well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. I mean, it's a long task because you have to sit there and you can't say a word, and for two days of this. And I tell you, when the meeting's over, I think they're more exhausted than we are having to sit there. And then we allow them to comment, and we want to hear their comments. And I tell you, it makes you, the best part of that is when they sit and they go, wow, man, I see the process now. And it's unbelievable. I wish, you almost wish you more people could see it, but it doesn't work that way. But so, there are overseers in a sense. I mean, I think, if stuff went on there that was untoward, or it wasn't like, I think you hear some leaks from some of these people, and not that they're told not to say anything, they describe what goes on there, but I think, like I said, I wish more people could actually see the process and the arguments that go back and forth, and like the re-ups, you know. So we'll do a category, and then at the end of the category, we'll say, okay, you know, our chairman Everett Dobson is just does a great job of keeping the meeting under control. We'll ask, okay, do we want to revisit anything? And then we'll go on. And then at the end of the day, we'll say, you know, does anybody want to go back and talk about a race? And that happens. And, you know, we'll possibly revisit it and go over it. So nothing's done lightly. Nothing's done quickly. And like I said, not even in the day. It takes years of process for things to happen. Going up as well too. I mean, there's some races that hit the ground running, and you know, rarely does it. You have to have run under the right conditions for 2 years to be considered for a grade in the third year, and rarely does that happen. It does, but we want to see some form, and then if you look down, we only upgraded one race to one. We upgraded like I think four to two, four to three, something like that. I think there was only seven or eight upgrades the whole time, so that kind of just showed you. And there were some downgrades because some of these, you know, some of the lower grade threes were just, you know, not cutting it. They were just been on the bottom of the list for too long, and that comes down to, you know, just not enough good horses to make the rounds. And whether this is a trend coming up, we're not sure. And like I said, trends come organically. We don't make trends. We don't say, okay, well, let's do this, let's do that. Just kind of, it was time for what happened this last time.
I'm pulling the 5 years of the Cigar Mile, and actually, as you look up and down the fields, you actually can acknowledge that it just doesn't seem like there have been enough grade
right.
one performers that yeah. To be honest, I mean, yeah, no, I got it.
You know, you just kind of, you know, I like to talk individually about races, but like I said, sometimes when you put the stuff in front of you, you go, whoa, wow, I see what you mean. You want those grade ones to be a cut above, and so there's some of them that are slipping and they're not, and you know, I think this basically showed there's races that are untouchable only because they're that good. They're just so far above. But there's races that, you know, historically were unthought of. But there was really no race that's untouchable. If it doesn't make the cut, things could happen. And, you know, the one thing that's hard to explain sometimes is, you know, it's hard to compare one race to another. And it's more than just numbers. It's not, well, let's say, you know, you have a 6.2 in this category, and this one only has a 5.3 and this and that. And that's hard to explain because the numbers are a guide. We have graded points that are awarded for horses that run in and out of races. There's quality points, which are the graded races, and then there's other points that can be garnered by, you know, having stake winners in your race. And so the field size, obviously, the bigger the field size, the more chance for more points is one of the categories. There's the ratings in there. So, and they're a guide. And then there's the part that is talked about, you know, what's going on in that region. What are the effects of this? What are the effects of that? Have they tried to do something to, you know, make it better, things like that. So many things are taken into consideration, and, we don't want to wipe them. I mean, there's, you know, probably some races in there that, you know, by numbers wise should have gone up or down, but you look at each situation locally, regionally, nationally, how it's going to affect things. And, it's one of the deals after you feel like you've been in battle for a little bit and you walk out of there and you feel, you know what, I feel good about what happened. Not everything that You, meaning that, you know, each person wanted to see happen happens, but you know the process was done right, and you vote on your race, and then you turn a page and move on to the next one. So it's you know, I can speak without reservation that it's a grueling process, but it's fair from top to bottom.
The turf, this is going to come up with Andy next too, based on some of the things I saw him, you know, some of it, he had a couple of tweet reactions, and he did bring up a good,
oh, yeah.
Did you see that? I thought Andy
no.
brought up, well, I th- he brought up an interesting point, Rick, and that is that the concentration of turf it seems to be, I mean, is it injuring, you know, what essentially is America's, you know, defining characteristic, which is speed on dirt? Is it coming, you know, is the rise of turf coming at the expense of, you know, our signature, you know, classic, you know, speed on dirt?
Well, obviously, I mean, that's not something that happened, you know.
No, not overnight. No, I know.
It's been going on, you know, for 10 years. It's starting to, yes, it absolutely is starting to affect. I think, I mean, just watching the races, I think there, you know, some people are people that, you know, want to run their horses. A lot of owners have just said, you know what, I don't think I can win on the dirt and, you know, in certain regions. And, you know, hey, let's hit the turf route. And, you know, racers seem to you know, they're a little closer. They're more competitive. And, you know, hey, we got beat four. We ran eighth, but we only got beat four lengths. Maybe we'll get the trip next time type of thing. And yes, turf racing has exploded on the scene over the last, you know, decade more so, absolutely, in the next 5 years. I mean, we didn't even have, you know, look at the Breeders' Cup. We have turf sprint now. I mean, we have juvenile turf sprint. We have, you know, we have the turf races. So when you have end games, so to speak, now, when you have a turf sprint, a legitimate turf sprint as in a Breeders' Cup, well, what's that going to mean? That's going to mean, you know, we need to develop some races here. We have, you know, the two-year-old races on the turf that have been around for, what, 10 some years now. So that's going to create some more interest in turf racing just throughout the year to get to those races. Now we have a juvenile turf sprint that has become a Breeders' Cup race. So when you have those races out there, you know, categories are created. I mean, we didn't have you know, 3-year-old sprint turf. I mean, that wasn't even a category. It's a category now. So, you know, you have to, you know, create some kind of pyramid for those kind of races. But absolutely, turf racing has you know, has come on the scene. I mean, just look out here at San Anito over the years. You know, when I left here, you know, God, 4 years ago, well, that's pretty wild, 4 years ago. So 2018 was my last year. I mean, I think, I don't know, like we tried to run one or two during the week and, you know, maybe three on the weekend, sometimes four. You know, so I'm guessing, you know, they're third of the races, maybe somewhere in that range. And now they're 50%. You know, just here in this region. And, you know, I guess the obvious the feel is, hey, you know what? I'm, you know, there's a lot of good 2-year-olds that come through here and 3-year-olds that I can't compete with. So let's get some turf horses. So, and that's just one region. And that's probably, you know, happened over the country as well.
Yeah. Well, I'll be anxious. Be anxious to hear Andy's thoughts. One of the races that he's going to bring up is the American Oaks, and I printed out the last five, and one of the elements of it, actually, I mean, to that's an instantly notable, is the West Coast horses that participated in it, you know, at the end of their 3-year-old year, obviously, and the ones that basically stayed out there on the West Coast and ended up and are Grade One winners, you know, because they're sticking around in their own. It's sort of almost like a self-perpetuating scenario.
And that can happen. That can happen at races, the places that race year round. Like you said, the New Yorks have that. In Kentucky sometimes have that. California, if you look at them, they got beat up pretty good here this year. I don't know, a number of downgrades on dirt and turf. And what's happened there is, for years, we had a lot of East Coast horses that would come here and not only come and run to certain races, but stable here and, kind of contribute to that. A lot of those races that hasn't happened as much. You do get the invader here and there, like we saw, during the Del Mar meet. There was, the recent, turf festival where Grand Motion, I think, won, Chad won, and, some of the out of towners do well. And so, there's some races that are being looked at there. But I say California got beat up pretty good. Their racing has not been as top heavy as it's been in the past, and that's going to show, and that'll continue to show.
Yeah, I'm just looking at these at the five the Oaks, and of course they'll run it next Monday. But last year Queen Goddess wins for Michael McCarthy, and Fluffy Sox was third. Ivy League was fourth, and they've gone on to have okay 4-year-old years. Obviously, you look at Duopoly, who won it in 20. Going to Vegas was second. Red Lark sharing Neige Blanc up the track a little. When Lady Prancelot won, here was Mucho Unusual, who then subsequently the next 3 years. Essentially, next 2 years went on to good things. Yeah, it's like
there. Take that card. You have three-year-old fillies on the turf. I mean, wow. I mean, now we actually have a real category. And so some of the two-year-old races and three-year-old races. Granted, it's at the end of the year are a little trickier. They don't have as many opportunities for graded races in the category to continue on in the category. They sometimes depend on those horses going on later to develop their points. And how you get those points, you get a 2-year window from when the race was run backwards and forwards. So, horses that come into the race with, zero graded, zero graded races on their resume could leave that race and then go on and win 2 or 3. And for the next couple of years, you get credit back. And so they're a little bit trickier than some of the established races that depend on horses going into the race with the graded credentials. So like I said, you can't compare the American Oaks with a dirt race, that's run in a different, the fairgrounds Oaks,
right,
or something.
Right.
You just can't. Every section, every category, regionally, locally, and nationally is looked at as a total different animal. And so something that doesn't look like, this race compared to that race, it's apples and oranges. So each category, each time of year, each region is thought about separately. Like I said, the numbers are a guide, but there's other things that go into the talk and discussion of each individual race. So, and like I said, sometimes you're making decisions that, and when we vote, there's 11 of us, and when we vote, there it's a quote secret ballot, but the votes are recorded, meaning, the TOBA, this is run under TOBA, which is Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association. I'm sure they take a look at that, and they're like, oh, geez, look at this guy. He votes against every race that's, in the Midwest, and he votes for every race here. So they're secret, but and I've never heard of anybody gets pulled up. I mean, it's just a very fair process as far as, look, you vote the way that you're supposed to vote. There's not a whole lot of homership going on in there, and that's what makes it, you walk out of there going, there's a fair vote.
Right. We always have this discussion because there's certain percentage of listeners that just, they don't know the mechanism and the process.
And like I said, it's nothing that's hidden. It's open. Anybody that wants to read about it, you put that link up there, and kind of explains a little bit of it. And and entirely too, we each have our categories, and they're given out earlier in the year, so we kind of each follow our own little category more than we do the whole ball game, and so we're up on it. And but none of us takes this lightly. That is for sure. And, sometimes you always hear if everybody likes what you did, you probably didn't do the right thing. So then there's discussion. It's healthy. So, I'm happy to offer what I can and without getting, too specific. And, like I said, it's an open system, and that's why we have people in to watch what we do. And that's it. We'll move on all have a Merry Christmas, but we'll talk again on Friday.
You got it.
By then they'll have the, I think we're drawn out here for Santa Anita in a couple of days.
Tomorrow. So
we can talk about opening day.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's Wednesday. That's right.
Yeah.
So there we go. And Joe, get a quick, I've got some calendars. I just took a load over to the post office the other day. So real quickly, anybody out there wants a calendar from Kentucky Downs? They're stepping up in the Kentucky HBPA. Trying to get you to send a photo. I've got some great photos. I will get some of them up. A photo of yourself or a family member at a concert, any concert, piano recital, anything, or a sporting event. Take a picture of the football game on TV, anything you want. And send that, some interesting ones there as well. So do that and send it to Kentucky Downs calendar at yahoo.com or abbreviation KY Downs calendar at yahoo.com. Just put calendar in the section. Make sure you send your address. It's amazing. It's about 10% that get so excited they send a picture and tell a nice story and forget to send your address, but I will remind you. So Kentucky Downs calendar at yahoo.com. And we'll get a calendar out to you. So thanks. Good to talk to you midweek. So I won't say goodbye, but I'll see you in a couple days.
Talk to you Friday, and we'll wrap up the year with Hammer, as we do, and I appreciate it. I'll also put up those links for everybody to Toba's section. If you want to go on your own, you go to Toba, and you'll find the Graded Steak Committee section, AGSC, and it's Toba.org for those that have never visited. There's actually tons at the website, including the on-track seminars that they do for ownership and confirmation and a lot of terrific things. And here, actually, they don't really have the drop-down like they used to. It's actually, I haven't visited but at the top bar, to the center right, join Toba, renew, seminars and clinics, Graded Stakes. And if you go to the Graded Stakes section, it has, everything involved that you could possibly want to know about how the process works. So I recommend it highly. If you go to the first page, of the Graded Stakes section. Grading procedure, technique and information, notification, objective factors, grading session workbook. It's all there. And even though it seems at times, somewhat mysterious or arbitrary, there is a very distinct, mechanism for this and construct that governs it. Top of the hour upon us. Andy Serling is going to join us next. This hour, Andy, Case Clay, and Papo. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.